This is Space Kate at the Science Museum in London. I've come along for one of their open evenings where they open it up late for the adults to come around and look at things without any screaming children. And they also put on lots of interesting talks. I've just sat through a talk by Professor Ian Morrison. You've got an amazing title. You hold the Gresham Chair of Astronomy?
Exactly, the Gresham Chair of Astronomy. It's the oldest chair in the world, actually, of astronomy. Dates back to 1597. And rather nicely, Christopher Wren held it in about 1620, just when they started the Royal Society, which actually was founded at Gresham College.
That's actually pretty incredible. And you were saying some really interesting stuff in your talk. You were actually kind of involved in some of the space race. Do you want to tell us that story?
Yes, well, the point was that I've spent my working life at the Jodrell Bank Observatory, the big dish in Cheshire, and I got there in 1965 when things were beginning to hot up quite interestingly. And the one thing I was directly involved with was when the Russians soft-landed Luna 9 on the surface of the Moon. And our scientists, not me, realised that if we had a particular bit of kit called a Muirfax machine, we might be able to decode the pictures that we thought it was sending back to Earth. The Daily Express loaned us a Muirfax machine, and we hooked it up, and it whirred away in exact synchronism, just as it should, and I watched that happening. But it actually produced a photographic plate, which had to be processed. And my hobby then was photography. I helped the chap from the Daily Express process that plate. So I was actually one of the first two people in the Western world to know what the moon's surface looked like. When you're 21, that's quite exciting. But obviously after that, well, I guess it was, but that was certainly it's one of those moments you'll never actually forget. Like seeing the scars on Jupiter when Shoemaker Levy 9 crashed into it, things like that. There are a few things that just don't go out of your mind. But of course I was then at Jodrell Bank during the whole of the Gemini Apollo missions. And we basically tracked all of those. We could listen directly to the astronauts sending their voice signals back to Earth. We tracked Apollo 11 down to the surface. This was quite exciting too. It was coming down under computer control in a lovely smooth arc, as you might expect. But then Armstrong, who was piloting the lunar excursion module, the Eagle, realized they were going to land in a crater. And so he took manual control. He hadn't got much fuel left, as it happened. And we actually watched him, the module sort of go rather jerkily across the surface until it obviously had got past the crater, and then it landed, and then it was obviously nice and steady. So that was a plot that was pretty good proof that the Americans really had landed on the moon. And in a program produced a few years ago to try and show that they really had gone, in fact, Buzz Aldrin explained exactly what happened as they were landing the Eagle. And that was intercut with me showing the plot that we had taken at Jodrell Bank and describing what we observed. And it matched perfectly. Now, look, no one argues now. We've got photographs of the actual LEMs on the surface, what the things that are left. You can even see the astronauts' footprints, really, on, not quite. But, you know, when hikers go across some grass, they leave a bit of a trail behind. You can see that. And, of course, they left behind little reflectors, rather like cat's eyes, that reflect laser signals back from Earth. We've been looking at those for years, ever since, and that's how we know the moon's gradually moving away from us by about 3 or 4 centimeters a year. So
with those, you send a laser up from the Earth, yes. It bounces back, and then you just sort of measure that.
Exactly.
I guess you need a pretty powerful
laser. Oh, you do. Oh, they have a very special laser in the States that does it, and that is absolute proof. The funny thing is, they have to be very small little reflectors, not one big one, because if it was a big one, it would reflect the signal back to precisely where it came from. But of course, the Earth is rotating, so by the time 2.5 seconds later the signal would get back, you wouldn't be there to pick it up.
And when the signal comes back, I'm assuming it's not quite so powerful. It's not going to suddenly start burning holes in the Earth.
The signal comes back is very, very weak. You need a big telescope to pick it up. But they had to have lots of little baby ones to scatter the light enough so that where you were when the signal came back, you'd still pick it up. All rather fun.
So, I mean, we've heard a lot about the Americans landing on the moon and the Apollo, Mercury, Gemini programs. What about the Russian stuff?
Well, of course, they, in a sense, were leading the space race when, for example, Sputnik went up, and then they had the dog Laika. They had two people up together. They had spacewalks before the Americans did. And, of course, Gagarin was the first man to orbit the Earth. The reason why they were ahead at the beginning was simply because the Russian nuclear technology was not as good as the Americans. The Russian nuclear bombs were much more bigger and more massive. They needed bigger rockets to send them up. And the things that actually launched all these early space race things were their intercontinental ballistic missile launchers. The Americans had to build, in a way, almost specific rockets to do the job. It took them time to do that. They did have a manned lunar project. The trouble was the giant launcher that they built, the N2 I think it was, five of them all exploded when they tried to launch them.
Not the people on?
No. They hadn't got to the point of having manned, not that we know anyway. And in fact, essentially this was all secret until, well, relatively recently. When the wall went down, these things became open. So although they had good plans, they never actually materialised, which is very sad, really. One thing they did try and do, and Jodrell Bank was involved with, we used a small telescope to actually track Apollo 11 to the surface. You didn't need a big one. But at the same time, our big 76-metre dish was actually tracking Luna 17, which was a Russian craft, and the idea was to actually land, take some soil, and bring it back to Earth, and get it back to Earth before the Americans did. Sadly, that crash landed. I think it was in the Sea of Crises, but anyway, it crash landed, and we actually followed it to the surface, which was a pity, really, because it would have been wonderful if they'd actually beaten the Americans to that. So the Russians tried incredibly hard, and in a way, I'm sorry they weren't slightly more successful.
Well, you say that, but now that the American shuttle program is landing, it's only the Russians that can get astronauts back up to the space station. So in a way,
they have had the last laugh.
And I think they just put their prices up from $50 million per seat to $63 million a seat, proving that they have now learnt the American lessons of capitalism.
Absolutely. And it's good to see that happening. It's going to be a while, in fact, before the Americans have something to do the same thing. So well done, Russians.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.